Sports bettors, Circa Sports now presents Palm Saturdays with Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm. Live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Here on 104.3 The Score. And watch live on YouTube and Twitch. Featuring the latest and the greatest of the sports betting landscape from coast to coast, along with some great guests. Here he is, Mike Palm.
Good morning, live from Bar Canada here. It's Palm Saturdays on the actual Palm Saturday. That's right. That means Palm Sunday's tomorrow and Easter just 8 days away. And oh, by the way, who's our guest this morning? None other than Jerry Palm from Jerry Palm Brackets. Of course, many of you know Jerry Palm from all his years working with CBS analyzing college basketball. He did such a great job. He had another fantastically accurate bracket again this year. He's in Chicago, was there for the Sweet 16 games last night. We'll talk to Jerry, get his thoughts coming up here in about 20 minutes, get his thoughts on the Elite Eight matchups, how home court or how fan travel affects these games. I thought Iowa State would have a big advantage last night. It appeared that way on TV. Tennessee ran them out. I thought that Michigan State drew a tough draw. UConn and Washington, D.C., it looked like it was about 4-1 UConn fans. How much of a factor is that in the games? Recently, he made a statement. He thinks Matt Painter is very underrated, and he needs to be considered one of the modern legends of the game. I'll challenge him a bit on that. That's Jerry Palm coming up in a little over 20 minutes. Well, Chicago will get back underway with baseball later today, and so you can sort of put that horror story of opening day behind you. I hope the Cubs and the White Sox have time to overcome that loss in the next 161 games. So let's move on and focus on what's happening in Houston at 5:09 Central Time today, where we are assured of getting at least one Big Ten team into the Final Four. There's a possibility of three still, but we're assured of one because Illinois is taking on Iowa, and what a beautiful matchup that this is. I have a lot of thoughts on this game. I obviously grew up in Dubuque, Iowa, so my parents were huge Iowa fans. Grew up a Dr. Tom Davis fan. This is Iowa's first time to the Sweet 16 this century. Think about that. People were stunned when I tell them that. 1999 was the last time they even made it to the second weekend of the tournament. What a long, barren stretch of 25 years. I mean, and you had the Luke Garza Player of the Year, you had the Murray brothers, and they could never get out of the first weekend. I remember as a two seed, they lost to seven-seeded Oregon a few years ago. Couldn't play enough defense under Fran. And then Elite Eight. I remember 1987. They had UNLV, who was the one seed, down 16 points in the first half in that game in the Kingdom, and the Running Rebels came back and beat that great Iowa team, the best Iowa team in my lifetime with Roy Marble and B.J. Armstrong and Ed Horton. And so now they've made it again in this incredible run under Ben McCollum, and what awaits them, a familiar foe in Illinois. Now, I think in this matchup that rebounding is going to be the key to the whole game. We can look at how these two teams have played throughout the course of the year, but both of them have played at a different level in this tournament. And when you look at Illinois, here's their rebounding advantages that they had. In the opening round matchup against Penn, well, you're going to expect that they're going to dominate Penn on the boards, 48-25. And then against the Virginia Commonwealth team, a tough Virginia Commonwealth team, played in the A-10, had that huge comeback against North Carolina. Illinois, 45-29, rebounding advantage. And then against Houston, Houston and Calvin Sampson, considered to be one of the best defensive and one of the best rebounding teams in the country. And the game in Houston, Illinois out-rebounds them 43-34. Let's hear Iowa head coach Ben McCollum looking ahead to this matchup with the Illini and what he's most concerned about.
Ben, when you watch Illinois on defense, especially in this tournament, what are you seeing and what exactly stands out to you?
Tall people. Seeing a lot of tall people. I mean, they've just got such elite length. I mean, their length is elite. And honestly, probably the most unsung hero in their entire program is Boswell. I mean, he is the edge that they need. He's the alpha. I mean, he's good. He's physical. He gets downhill. He defends. He's got great energy. I think he's the leader of that defense. But they've got great length defensively. They're more keep you in front. They don't foul a lot than some of the other teams that we've played. But they obviously do a great job defensively as well.
I took a stand against Iowa three times this year. And one of them was the first time that they played, or the only time they played Illinois. That was back on Sunday, January 11th, in Iowa City at Carver Hawkeye. Both teams were 12-3 coming into the matchup. Illinois was ranked 16th, Iowa was ranked 19th. I remember I laid one in this game with Illinois. I think it closed 1.5. Illinois led 21-5 at the under 12 timeout in the first half. They got right out to a big lead. I think they led by 18 at one point. Sort of cruised to victory, 75-69. In that game, the Illini outshot the Hawkeyes 49-41 overall, 38-31 from three, and out-rebounded Iowa, 29-21. But the point there is the offensive rebounds were equal, but Iowa missed many more shots. So Illinois held their own on the board. The other time, second time I took a stand against Iowa was in February the 22nd, another Sunday game when they were at Wisconsin, catching four, won that game as well. The third time I took a stand, and let's be thankful that this show airs on Saturday, so I didn't know the bracket, so you didn't get this pick, but I really liked Clemson against them in their first round matchup. I thought they drew poorly. Clemson was a team that liked to play in the half court. It didn't care about Iowa's pace. It had balanced scoring, and let's not forget the fact that in their last 10 regular season Big Ten games, Iowa was giving up 59% adjusted field goal defense. They were not good defensively, and giving up 41% from three. Well, they dominated Clemson. They beat them up on the boards 40-27 in that game and held Clemson to 41% shooting. Then they come up against Florida in Tampa. Florida's the defending champs. They're an elite rim defending team. Great front court. Iowa shoots 70% from two in that game. Florida still shot 50%, but they held their own on the boards, 27-27. Now, they got out-rebounded by Nebraska in the Elite Eight game in Houston, 35-26. But that's also part of a function of Nebraska only shot 41% in that game, and Iowa shot but much better from three than Nebraska did. So you have to sort of throw out Iowa because what they've done here in the tournament in these last three games has been very, very special. They found themselves down 12 to Nebraska in the first half, and this Ben McCollum team did not panic. They stuck to the big game plan, and eventually they wore Herbie Husker down, and we know Nebraska made a few mistakes down the stretch. Now let's hear from Bruce Underwood about the challenges Illinois faces today against the Hawkeyes.
What specifically are they doing differently, if anything, that you have noticed in preparation for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that there's it's not one thing. I think their ability to be diverse. They've played, they played a shooting lineup a lot yesterday with Cooper and Sage. I think that both those young men are better. You know, they're not freshmen anymore, not playing like freshmen. They're playing like chiseled veterans. They can play big. I think they're defensively very dialed in, very focused. It was kind of an unusual first half for me personally watching them yesterday because both teams were elite at shot making. I kind of had a mindset that the halftime score might be the final score. But they are they're rebounding better, especially on the offensive side. So I think they've got it. I think they're doing a lot of things very, very well. They played big against Clemson. Obviously, they matched Florida on the glass, which is very impressive. We scrimmaged Florida. We know how challenging that was. So, they're obviously playing very well.
So the challenge here is how do we attack this game from a betting perspective? I always make my own number on a game, and then I see what the market comes out at, and I see the way that the market reacts to the number. I'm challenged here because of Iowa's recent form and how much I have to adjust my power number on the Hawkeyes. And I don't want to be too big of a prisoner to the moment, and yet this run seems very special. And when you go back and you look at Ben McCollum, he wins four national championships at Division II Northwest Missouri State. He takes his players from there and goes to Drake. And in his one season at Drake, he wins a Missouri Valley regular season and conference championship. And then immediately gets hired at Iowa and has taken them to the Elite Eight for the first time since 1987. Could he be the Kurt Cignetti of the college basketball game? I'm not sure. In my heart of hearts, I want to make this number six. Right? I ended up making it 5.5. Well, the number came out 7, and we've seen Illinois money here now up to 7.5. I'm not interested in laying 7.5 in this game, although I do think that the Illini move on. From a perspective of how do you attack the game, maybe we'll look at the total. You heard Brad Underwood said it was an incredibly high-scoring first half. They scored only 12 points, they scored only 17 points less in the first half of Nebraska-Iowa 3 as they did in the whole game in Nebraska-Iowa 1 in the game in Iowa City. Now, the game came back to more of the expected pace in the second half. But we'll talk to Jerry Palm more about the game when he's on here in about 15 minutes and his thoughts on the game. And we'll have a best bet in our final segment. Let's move on to the other matchups of the Elite Eight. It's very funny because I like the women's game a lot, and I say, you know, we still get these huge point spreads when we get to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and even the Final Four in the women's game. Well, the shortest point spread of all is Arizona and Duke now at 5, but Arizona and Purdue, which has gotten bet down from 6 to 5.5. So you're looking at a 5, a 5.5, and 2 7.5s is the lines in the Elite Eight games. Look, Purdue was preseason number one. They didn't have a great regular season. When you look and you put them up against Arizona, how did they do against elite competition? Well, they both won at Alabama. There's the common team. Purdue won in Tuscaloosa. Arizona beat them in Birmingham, but both beat Alabama. Purdue did beat Texas Tech early in the year when they still had Toppin. But the concern of Purdue is against the elite competition. Iowa State beat Purdue by 23 at Mackey Arena in December. That's when Purdue was still number one. Arizona beat Iowa State twice, handily at McHale and then in a tremendous game in Kansas City in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament. Illinois won at Mackey this year in January, 88-82. Purdue, their best, other than beating Michigan in the championship game of the Big Ten tournament, they did beat a Nebraska team twice, but they also lost at home to Michigan State, 76-74. So it's a mixed bag with Purdue, and they own really only one victory over an elite team in Michigan. And then when you look at Arizona, the resume that they have, they beat Florida, who was a one seed in this tournament in Las Vegas. They beat UConn, who was a two seed in this tournament at Gamble Pavilion in Storrs, Connecticut. They beat Houston twice, in Houston and in the Big 12 championship game. Houston was a two seed. And as I said, they beat Iowa State twice at home and in Kansas City, and Iowa State was a two seed. So the strength of the resume very much favors Arizona. I believe Arizona's the best team left in the tournament. That was my pick to win the tournament beforehand. I don't think that they've given any reason to question that so far. Do you want to lay now 5.5 against Purdue? I know guard play is very important in the NCAA tournament. I just think Arizona is so adept at taking advantage offensively that they can do what they want in the paint. And I don't think Purdue has enough depth in their front court to stay with Arizona. We're going to lay the 5.5 here. I'm surprised the number came down. I thought it would go from 6 to 6.5. So we'll lay the 5.5 here. That's the night game tonight. That game will tip off about 7:45 Central Time. And then we have the two matchups tomorrow in the Elite Eight. Incredible regional in Washington, D.C. One, from the standpoint of the four coaches. Think about having Danny Hurley, Tom Izzo, Rick Pitino, and then John Shire, who, you know, he here's a guy that might end up with a career winning percentage of 85 when he's got a program like Duke, and he's going to be a top five team every year if he can continue to recruit to that level. So there'll be the second game tomorrow at 4:05 from Washington, D.C. It's UConn against Duke. This number is 5. It's now moved to 5.5 in some places. St. John's gave Duke everything they wanted last night. I think a few breaks of the ball. I didn't think St. John's got any kind whistles in the first half of that game. I thought they probably should have been up 5, 6, 7 points at half. They were up by 1. You know, Duke ends up not fouling, and it works out for them at the end. But that was really a coin flip game. And then UConn, who for the first 10 minutes of that game looked so much more athletic than Michigan State, and I do think the crowd was a factor there. They were up 19. They were up 19, and just by the sheer force of Tom Izzo, Michigan State ground their way back into that game and cut it to 10, then cut it to 8 at half, and then they came out and got it down to 3. Then they got it to 1, and then UConn spurted out, and they just kept grinding, and they had their chances down the stretch. But UConn prevails. I do think Duke is the more talented team here. I'm not sure how UConn can handle the agility of Boozer in the paint. You saw with Arizona's big men, UConn struggled earlier in the year. I give the advantage to Duke here. They're one of the two teams. I still have a future on them in Arizona. I'm not laying 5.5, but I do like Duke to march on here. And then in the early game in Chicago, I'm very impressed by what Tennessee did with Iowa State. They completely took Iowa State off the offensive boards last night. Iowa State could not get an offensive rebound in the first half of that game, and the game basically went to half with a push. Tennessee up 1, and then Tennessee just systematically ground them down in the second half, played efficient offensively. We talk about Rick Barnes and all his failures in the tournament and how many games he lost when he had Kevin Durant at Texas. This is three straight Elite Eight appearances for him. And in this era, it's different teams every year with NIL and the transfer portal. They've done a great job getting here. That being said, I think Michigan just has too many athletes and too much size. Michigan can basically play any style game you want. Now, they want to get out there and they want to play loose. Alabama played right into their hands. They love the freelance, and even though they have the height advantage, they still want to chuck up the threes. I've got Michigan moving on here. I think they will cover the 7.5. I'll get to that as a best bet in the last segment, how we want to play that number. But Michigan, I think this matches up very well for them, getting 6-seed Tennessee in the regional final. Very briefly, before we get to the first break, just a few quick thoughts on Cubs and White Sox today. 1:20 start here. Cubs hopefully get that bad taste out of their mouth from opening day. And they get what really should be their ace this year, Cade Horton, back against Miles Mikolas. Now, my biggest criticism of the Nats, and the reason I didn't end up betting the Cardinals at 18-1 to have the most losses, was that the Nats' starting rotation is so bad. Mikolas is on the downturn of a mediocre career, and his walk rate per nine innings has always been amongst the worst in baseball here. I think if the Cubs are patient today, I'm not going to lay 210 or 212 in the market here. You can lay a run and a half here with the Cubs, -115, and then the White Sox will be at the Brewers, 6:10 Central Time. Sean Burke against Chad Patrick. We'll take a look at Burke's total outs prop in the final segment. All right, when we come back here on Palm Saturday on The Score, we're going to talk to Jerry Palm. That's up next.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays. We're with you right up till the end of the hour, till 10 a.m. Central, when it's David Haw and Bruce Levine inside the clubhouse. It's our pleasure to bring to you via the Circus Sports Illinois hotline, betting the way it should be, Jerry Palm. Jerry, you're there in Chicago. Thanks for getting up early this morning and joining us.
Oh, I'm always up this early, and thanks for having me on.
Hey, you are welcome. Everybody probably knows Jerry from all the great work he did on CBS through the years. Now you can find all his work at palmbrackets.com. Let's talk about, before we get into these Elite Eight matchups, Jerry, let's talk about the job you think the committee did this year. You were very, 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 very accurate again, especially with getting the seedings. Was there any, I know some coaches had a quibble. Folks thought St. John's was underseeded. Jared Calhoun at Utah State thought they were underseeded. Was there anywhere that you might have had a quibble with the job the committee did?
I don't think they were off by maybe more than one spot on any of these teams. You know, the one I thought maybe should have been higher was Vanderbilt. A 5 didn't feel right for Vanderbilt. Still, a 4 would have been better. They could have even been a 3, I think. Of course, I think they lost their first game, if I remember correctly, so they weren't in it for long. But I didn't really have a lot of problems with what the committee did this year. They were more up front about stuff like, for example, wins above bubble being important with selections, which made it easier for people like me to try and figure out which teams would get in. Miami of Ohio was, of course, the big controversy, whether a team like that should get in. And, they beat a shorthanded SMU in a first four game. And then Tennessee, kind of blew their doors off, which kind of fit with the predictive metrics with regard to Miami. But that apparently wasn't a big factor in whether or not they got selected.
Jerry, was it just me or did the bubble seem weaker than in most years? And by that I mean, if a team got left out, they didn't really have much of an argument.
It's been it was weaker this year than last. Last year was weak and weaker than the year before, which was also. So it's been a trend 3 years at least of the bubble being worse than the year before. And, really you're deciding – you're getting to the point where you're deciding which teams aren't so much more worthy as it's more like less unworthy of being in this field. And the last 3 years have been, but this year especially, all the evidence we need not to expand this tournament because it's hard to find enough teams that you think are tournament worthy now.
Well said, Jerry. Very well said. All right, let's talk about the matchups in chronological order here. We get a Big Ten showdown in Houston between really the surprise team that's still left in the tournament in Iowa. They weren't playing particularly well the last 6 weeks of the season against an Illinois team that I think we all knew had a lot of potential. Could they put it together on the defensive end of the floor for 40 minutes to beat some of these elite teams? They've done so far. They've controlled the boards in every game. Iowa's a little bit of a surprise. I don't know if they caught Florida off guard, if maybe Florida was looking past them. Obviously, you're now playing against these Big Ten teams. They're not taking Iowa for granted. They play them once or twice or more every year. How do you analyze the matchup between Illinois and Iowa?
Yeah, I had Illinois in my bracket in the Final Four. And it's because I think their size is a problem for most of the teams that they encounter. Because they've got big guys at just about every position. Point guard, not so much, but they're and they can shoot. All these guys can shoot. So the question for Illinois was always going to be, would they defend well enough in a big game to get deep into this tournament as they probably can. They play to the level of their ability, and this is a Final Four level talented roster. So. I think they've got, obviously, a very good chance today against an Iowa team that they're very familiar with. They're certainly better than, although in the NCAA tournament, it doesn't matter if you're generally better because hot matters. You just got to win 6 in a row one way or another. But I do like Illinois in this game against Iowa. And I think familiarity kind of helps when you're preparing on, 48 hours at most. To get ready for the next game. But they're both familiar with each other, so I don't know that that's a big advantage for Illinois necessarily. But just the talent and size is the big advantage for Illinois.
We're talking with Jerry Palm. Jerry, let's go from Houston out to the second game tonight. That's your alma mater, Purdue, and they are going to take on probably the toughest task in the tournament, having to deal with this elite Arizona team. I know you're very good at looking at teams' resumes. That's what you do for a living. And you can't really argue with Arizona. When you compare the resumes, they both won at Alabama, on campus for Purdue, in Birmingham for Arizona. But Iowa State really dismantled the Boilermakers at Mackey early in the year in December. Arizona's beat Iowa State twice, right? They beat Houston twice. The resume is very impressive. Purdue has beat Nebraska twice, and they were very impressive in beating Michigan in the Big Ten championship game. We open this number 6. The money is actually coming in on Purdue. We're down to 5.5. How much of a shot do you give your alma mater tonight?
Well, they're going to have to play as much mistake-free basketball as you can. They can't put themselves in a position where they're making it easy for Arizona to score by giving them the ball and giving them fast breaks or easy baskets. They're big, and Purdue's known for being big, but this Purdue team is not as big as some others. They're going to be a difficult matchup, and in ways they're similar to Michigan. I think they might even be a little bigger than Michigan. They're going to have their hands full. Daniel Jacobson may have to see the floor a little bit more than he has been lately, the 7'4", redshirt freshman. No, I guess he's a sophomore because he played one game last year and got hurt in it. His minutes have come down as the season has gotten later. But that's a guy that they're probably going to need on the floor for rim protection, if nothing else. And he's going to have to play well if he gets those minutes. Purdue's beat Michigan. This is a similar team to Michigan, not identical, obviously. And there's matchup problems that are going to persist. Braden Smith is going to have trouble defensively because of the size that Arizona puts out there. But I'm not going to say Purdue can't win. They're an underdog for a reason. And I'm picking Arizona, but Purdue's going to have a special effort similar to the one that they had in the Big Ten championship game if they're going to beat Arizona.
All right, let's move on to the two matchups tomorrow. You're there. You were at the United Center last night. I liked Iowa State. I thought they'd have a big home court advantage because those folks from Ames travel, and it's only a 4-hour drive. But that wasn't enough, and they couldn't get on the glass. And Rick Barnes' team advances to the Elite Eight for the third straight time, keeping the Cyclones off the glass and playing great defense in the half court in the second half. And now they meet up with, as you said, really the other juggernaut, Michigan. Michigan, a big favorite here, 7.5, Jerry.
Yeah, I like Michigan a lot. I picked them to win the tournament. I think Arizona's the biggest contender for them. But, of course, now they could also have to play Duke, who already beat them once on a neutral floor this year. So if those three teams are in the Final Four, that's a great Final Four. And Illinois, by the way, if it's them, is very capable against any of these teams. So we could end up with a great Final Four if it's those three number ones and Illinois. Michigan is a big size problem, for just about everybody, and it won't be any different with Tennessee. Tennessee can bully you on the boards, but they're not going to bully Michigan on the boards. So they're going to have to really play well. I thought Iowa State yesterday looked a step slow compared to Tennessee. Tennessee was faster to everything, and they just didn't look – Iowa State just didn't look right. But credit to Tennessee for, making them look that way. And they're going to have to play really well and crash the boards big time if they're going to have a chance to beat Michigan. I like the Wolverines. I liked them before the tournament. I haven't seen anything to change my mind. And I think it ends up being kind of a long day for Tennessee.
And then the final matchup back to Washington, D.C., where we had these great coaching matchups last night and two terrific games.
Yeah.
I thought it was a coin flip. Both games came down to coin flips. Either team could have won. St. John certainly gave Duke everything they wanted. Michigan State, I'm watching that game, Jerry. They're down 19 right off the bat. And I said, boy, they're just not athletic enough to play with this UConn team. And then, I don't know, maybe it's just the sheer force of Tom Izzo's will that they ground their way in back into that game and had a great chance to win at the end as well. Should be a terrific regional final here Duke is a 5-point favorite over UConn.
Yeah, that's two great teams. Not just blue bloods, but you know those are teams that know how to win this tournament, and not just historically, but you know recently. It's it's as good a matchup as you can ask for. I think Duke is better, talent wise. They're young, but it's a very talented team, and I think they're going to be hard to beat. But man, UConn knows how to win here in this environment. I think we're going to get a great game. Michigan State was kind of disappointing. You know, you get 19 points down. It's nice that you can run all the way back, but you use up a lot of energy trying to get back into a game like that, and then you don't necessarily have it at the end to finish the deal. You got to be ready at the start if you're going to beat one of these teams, and these two teams figure to be ready at the start. I don't think we're going to see a 19-point lead at 8-point in these games. I like Duke, I suppose. It's kind of a coin flip. But, you know, for me, Cam Boozer is the guy that I don't know that UConn can really defend well.
Of all the players in college basketball right now, and no matter what class they're in, who do you think will be the best pro long term?
I would say Yakvalbourg for Michigan because at 6'9", he's very versatile. He can play at least four positions. And sometimes, and I know they did this in the Big Ten tournament with Purdue when they were down, they threw him on Braden Smith to try and create a matchup problem for Purdue, which worked for a little bit. Not well enough, but I think that his versatility, his ability to play from anywhere on the floor, I think gives him a chance to be probably the best if I have to pick one, because I think there's a lot of really good, you know, pro prospects in the freshman class alone. And of course, Lindeborg's not a freshman, but there's going to be a lot of great players coming out of college basketball this year to the NBA.
I'm going to close with this question, and it's about the North Carolina job, Jerry. And you know, we heard and pretty accurately reported who their wish list was. You know, Brad Stevens, he's not leaving. He's not leaving the Celtics. Billy Donovan's name seems to be bantied about every time there's a big college job. I don't know if he wants to go back to college. But how good of a job is Carolina? Like, if I'm Tommy Lloyd, I'm never leaving Tucson. If I'm Dusty May, I'm not leaving Ann Arbor. Like, is Carolina a top five job in college basketball anymore? That measuring stick of Duke 8 miles away is tough.
Yeah, it is. But North Carolina cares a lot about basketball, and they fund it well. So the chances to succeed there are pretty good, even in a highly competitive environment. But they just haven't had the right person in that job. And, you know, they've tried to keep it in the family for as long as they could. I don't know that they can do that now. Probably not. But it's an attractive job, I would think. The guys that you mentioned have already got great jobs. And obviously, I don't know what it is, why every coaching job that opens up for, you know, Brad Stevens is getting called. He's the president of the Celtics. He's not coming back to coach college basketball. We have to call him. No, you don't. You're wasting 5 minutes. I think it's an attractive job. I think they'll get someone good. It's hard to pry someone away from Michigan or Arizona, where they've built something that's already good and sustainable. If you leave that for North Carolina, now you're building again. So if you like that kind of challenge, then I suppose. But I think they're going to have to get somebody maybe not quite so successful, but still successful enough to come into North Carolina and, first of all, win over the fans, because you're not probably going to have Carolina blue ties, and that'll make you unique. And then, go out and prove that you belong there. And so they're going to have somebody with some pretty thick skin and is a good salesman, not just for recruits, but to the fan base.
Jerry, we thank you for the time this morning. Enjoy Michigan and Tennessee tomorrow from the United Center. When we come back after the break, I'll give you my best bets, men's college basketball, women's college basketball, and Major League Baseball today. It's Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays. 15 more minutes till Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and Bruce Levine. All right, let's run the board here with our best bets for the day. And we haven't had the ability to talk about the women's tournament yet, but I've been betting it every day just like the men's. And I've been, you know, I remember the days when there was no legal book in the U.S. where you could bet women's college basketball before they got to the Sweet 16. Obviously, times have changed, but I still think if you follow women's basketball closely, there's an advantage there because the numbers aren't as sharp, and obviously money moves the market quicker because there's less volume on these bets. So we'll include that in our rundown. Let's go through the four Elite Eight games. We're going to start with Illinois versus Iowa here this afternoon. This game's going to tip at 5:09 Central Time from Houston. I don't know how Iowa can compete on the boards with Illinois. I just don't know how they can. And I'm not sure, although their half-court defense has been improved in the tournament, this Illinois team is elite offensively and efficient. They've been in the top three in offensive efficiency the entire season. They've gone in and they've beaten better teams than Iowa's beat. I know, but Iowa beat Florida, okay. But throughout the course of the year, really not the headlining wins in the Big Ten that Illinois had. And so I do believe that Illinois is the rightful favorite here. I do believe that they're going to be able to get to a lead like they did in Iowa City, and I think they can cover this number of 7.5. So our first bet, let's lay it with Illinois. Lay the 7.5. I'm going to sound like a chalk hound here, but I don't know how anybody other than Michigan really can match up with Arizona. People don't have the size inside, and this Arizona team has a grit about them that no Wildcats team has had since that 97 team of Lute Olson that won the national championship. This team fights through adversity and finds their way through games on their own as a team. They've played the toughest schedule in the country. The Big 12 was the toughest conference. I think Purdue is up against it here, a long way from home in San Jose. You know, Purdue often plays in Chicago. They play at Lucas Oil when they play in the tournament. This is San Jose, where these crazy Wildcat fans have traveled. Arizona, make no mistake about it, this is a basketball school first and a baseball school second. Football, they will be full support in San Jose. I like that this game is down now to 5.5. Let's lay it also with the Wildcats. I'm going to pass on the Duke game tomorrow. I already have a dog in that fight in Duke. Hurley's a great coach. They have the experience, Connecticut. If they upset Duke, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, you could make the argument I can middle this game by taking 5 here to protect my future, and maybe that's what I end up doing. But that has to do with my future position, and that's something I'm recommending for everybody that doesn't have an investment already in the future of one of these teams to do. So maybe in my portfolio for myself, I'll take 5 with UConn. I'm not laying it with Duke. And I'm with Jerry Palm here. I think Michigan drew really well into this tournament. They got a team in Alabama that wants to let them run up and down the court. That's what they want to do. That's my criticism of Michigan. When they play a team that's just as talented as them, they get too loosey-goosey here, and they don't stick within the framework of what Dusty May wants to do. They're also, at times, not the most intelligent team, and I say that because I don't think they close halves well and certain situational basketball. But I don't know that Tennessee has the height or enough depth in the front court to stay with them here. I'm going to lay the points. So in 3 of the 4 games, I'm going to lay the points on the men's side. Let's take a look at the women's game. And it's fascinating here because these lines are so exaggerated. First game this morning is at 11:30, Louisville against Michigan. I'm down on the Big Ten. And, you know, Iowa beat Michigan 3 times, and Iowa couldn't get out of Iowa City. They got beat by Virginia. I think that outside of UCLA, that the Big Ten was down. I thought Maryland would give North Carolina a game, that Brenda Freese couldn't get it done there. I'm going to take 5.5 with the Lady Cardinal here. I think Texas will take care of business against Kentucky. ever since Vic Schaefer called his team out and said they were soft when they lost to Vanderbilt, they've been on an absolute mission. We'll lay 14.5 in Fort Worth. In Fort Worth, it's not Austin, but in Fort Worth, Texas over Kentucky. This is an intriguing line. In Oklahoma, South Carolina, that's way out in Sacramento. You know, Oklahoma beat South Carolina. Texas beat South Carolina twice. Oklahoma beat them once. That's their three losses, 33-3. They beat them in overtime. And South Carolina comes back, and they're a 17.5-point favorite in this game. I'm sorry, just out of principle, I have to take 17.5 here with the Lady Sooners. And then I pass on Virginia TCU. I wasn't, for a win over Iowa, I wasn't overly impressed with Virginia. Iowa missed four free throws in the last minute of that regulation. Another thing, this game was, a friend asked me, he said, if you really want to watch and bet women's college basketball, which is harder to tolerate, the officiating or the announcers? And boy, I wouldn't want to live on the difference, I'll tell you. I think I come down to the announcers. I mean, there was a game with Minnesota and Ole Miss. The two announcers with 3 seconds left thought Minnesota was ahead, and it was a tie game, and were imploring Mississippi to foul. Beside that, there's just not enough depth of announcing in the women's game to have all these sites and all these games going televised at the same time. But beyond that, the reviews are ludicrous. They have to put a time limit on these reviews. Remember in the NFL when they first instituted the reviews? And the guys would go, Bernie Kukor would go under that black hood. The picture, the video replay showed for 90 seconds, and then it went blank. The screen went black, and the reason was if in 90 seconds you couldn't say the call was absolutely wrong, then you have to stick with the call on the field. I watched four reviews in the Iowa-Virginia game, and from the two-minute mark on till the end of double overtime, they had four reviews. They were in ascending order, 6 minutes long, 7.5 minutes long, 8 minutes long, and 9.5 minutes long. That's from the time they started the review to the time the ball came in bounds again. They took two commercial breaks in one of them. And three of the four times they upgraded a foul that wasn't called to a flagrant. You have to listen to that lady official say, we're upgrading from unobserved to flagrant. How can that be? Oh, God, it's awful. I digress, because I think you can make money in the women's game if you can tolerate it. And then we have two Elite Eight matchups. I need the UConn women to win it all. We have them from +190 before this season. They're -$4 now. Notre Dame's bit me twice in this tournament. I thought Ohio State would cover 5.5. Notre Dame won outright. I thought Vandy would cover 5.5 against them. The player of the year candidate for Vanderbilt was 1 of 13 in the first half. Notre Dame marched on. Now this number, 27.5. Come on. You cannot be serious. Take 27.5 with the Lady Irish. And UCLA over Duke. I like this game over 128.5. I missed an angle last night in the LSU-Duke game that I should have found. Flaje Johnson, the senior for LSU, who's been extremely important to that program, hates Carol Arson and has all this emotion behind Carol Arson. Carol Arson is the head coach at Duke, but she's the USA team basketball head coach, and she cut Flaje Johnson from the team last year. So there's all this distraction of how much Flaje Johnson and then by proxy her teammates hate Carol Arson, and that focus that Duke came out and really ambushed them last night in the Sweet 16 game. LSU was able to come all the way back. I think they ended up a 9-point favorite, but Duke ends up winning the game. I missed that handicapping angle, and I'm upset about that. So there, I just gave you five plays on the women's side if you like to dabble. You don't have to watch the games. You can see the results if you can't tolerate it. All right, and then let's turn our attention to Major League Baseball today. Cubs have to bounce back, don't they, against this Nationals team? If they don't, what will happen to the city of Chicago? I don't know if even Illinois making the Final Four can save it. But I like Horton. I thought it would be an interesting prop this year to put up. Which Cubs starting pitcher will have the most wins this year, record the most wins? I guess Horton would be a small favorite, but you could make arguments for four guys. I do think he'll be the ace of this staff. In a poll of the Major League Baseball's top scouts, one from each team, they were to rank their top 10 starting pitchers, and then they compiled the whole list. Horton was 40th. I thought that was interesting and a pretty good sign for a kid coming into his second full season in Major League Baseball. So if you lay the 1.5 with the Cubs today, meaning they have to win by two or more, the price is -115. I'm not interested in laying more than 2-1 just to win the game. And then I thought it's interesting if you study Sean Burke here, who's pitching for the White Sox today. FanGraphs is pretty terrific if you want to go and chart a pitcher in all their metrics through the course of the years. And then they do projections out as well. I find it to be a very valuable site when betting baseball. But if you look at Burke here, and look at how his the length of his starts has extended out and his innings each year, and then you look at their projections for him this year, they project him to have 141 innings over 26 starts. Now, obviously, there's some variance, and at the start of the year, it's probably going to be a little less than later in the year. I get that. But if you divide into that number, that means he averages somewhere between 5 1/3 and 5 2/3 innings. So 16 to 17 recorded outs. And that's, I really like to bet pitching like that, recorded outs. He's at 14.5 today, folks. That means he's got to complete 5 innings. I went over on Sean Burke, over 14.5 innings. So there's all your plays. Enjoy the rest of your Palm Saturday. Enjoy Palm Sunday. Go Cubs, go Sox, go Illini. We'll talk to you next Saturday morning on Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score.